This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. 20 to 30% of patients with multiple sclerosis first show the disease with visual symptoms known as optic neuritis. And 60 to 70% of patients with MS have optic neuritis at some point in their disease. So what characterizes this relationship between the two, and what does it tell us about multiple sclerosis in general? Here with some answers is Dr. Luis Mexico, professor of ophthalmology and professor and chair of the Department of Neurology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Mexico. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be back.
So let's begin with some basic definitions. Help us understand again, what basically is MS, multiple sclerosis?
So multiple sclerosis is an autoimmune disease. It's probably the most common autoimmune disease of the central nervous system.
So autoimmune.
So the immune system, which is the system that fights infection, bugs, and so on, turns against our own bodies. So examples of autoimmune disease in other parts of the body would be diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis and so on. In the case of the central nervous system, so we're talking about the brain and the spinal cord, multiple sclerosis is the most common disease. So the immune system is fighting our own body, in this case, the central nervous system.
And what happens? What does it do?
So it will attack primarily the sheath that covers neurons that is called myelin, and it will affect clinically with symptoms such as optic neuritis. That is today's topic, but sometimes without causing any symptom, just leaving a scar in the brain, for example.
And it's periodic?
It's periodic. It comes and goes. The most common form of multiple sclerosis is called relapsing remitting because it comes and goes. There's other forms of multiple sclerosis. By large, that is the most common.
And does it get progressively worse over time? Is that another characteristic?
Yeah, so there is a phase where we have relapses and remissions, and then there's a secondary progressive phase where the disease gradually progress. This is several years into the illness if left untreated.
And some people really have a more severe form and others have a milder form or a less progressive form in terms of their lifelong experience with the disease?
Absolutely. Just like anything else, just like a simple pneumonia can be something very mild or it can be extremely severe and life-threatening, similar with multiple sclerosis. But the good news is that for the most part, it tends to be a moderate disease that is certainly amenable to treatment.
So let's get back to optic neuritis. So what is that, and what is its relationship to MS? You alluded to it a minute ago.
Yeah, so optic neuritis is a general term that means inflammation of the optic nerve. However, the majority of people with optic neuritis is the form that it may be related to multiple sclerosis later on or as part of the disease, like you mentioned in the introduction. The optic nerve, you can view it as a cable that connects the eyeball with the brain, bringing vision primarily. But if one looks a little more carefully, it actually has the same microanatomy as the brain. So we have neurons that are in the retina, the inner layer of the eye. And just about 1 million nerve fibers in each eye will form what we call the optic nerve. So they merge in the retina to a meeting point, if you will, and from there on they travel into the brain in what is called the optic nerve. And at that point is that the sheath of myelin, this cover, almost like an electric cable that has a cover, develops. And that's the focus of the inflammation that we call optic neuritis.
So in fact, in a sense, the neuritis or the optic neuritis, is it a harbinger or is it it's an early warning perhaps of a later development of something like MS?
Many times it is. About 20 to 30% of patients, like you mentioned, with multiple sclerosis debut with optic neuritis. And the majority of people with multiple sclerosis will have optic neuritis at one point or another. So it's very important when a person has optic neuritis to undergo a full evaluation because it may mean that they either already have multiple sclerosis or they're at high risk for multiple sclerosis.
So who's most likely to get the optic neuritis, though? Is one population, is it gender specific, that kind of thing?
So anybody can develop optic neuritis, but the classical presentation is in a young woman, usually around 20 to 30 years old, and has a very specific presentation. the vast majority of people will have visual loss. The visual loss is central. More than 90% of patients will have pain when they're experiencing optic neuritis, and the pain is behind the eye, around the eye, and is triggered by eye movements. The majority of people with optic neuritis will have decreased perception of color, primarily red.
So they won't be able to see the color red? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's sort of washed out, more maroon or orangey is the way people describe it. Vision worsens in the first 2 weeks of the presentation, gradually, usually, and then sort of stabilizes for another week or two. And then for more than 90% of people, they start to improve, and vision returns to normal or near normal in more than 90% of patients. That is without any treatment.
So it does basically resolve on its own, but what's most significant about it is the fact, well, first of all, in some patients, is there a continued loss of vision?
Yes, unfortunately, there is a small percentage, about 8 to 10% of people that don't recover well. But even people that recover well will notice that, or may notice rather, that their vision is not perfect. And we rely so much on vision that even having a slight diminishment of vision will be
unsettling.
Exciting.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with neuro-ophthalmologist Dr. Luis Mexico, and we're talking about optic neuritis and its relationship to multiple sclerosis. So for many people, this diagnosis of optic neuritis is almost equivalent to having a high risk for MS. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so a lot of what we know about optic neuritis comes from a pivotal study that was supported by the National Institute of Health that's called the Optic Neuritis Treatment Trial, ONTT for short. And this was a study that was done in the late 80s, early 90s, and we learned so much from that study that we're still quoting it 25 years later. So we learned from that study that there are some factors that increase the risk of developing multiple sclerosis. Having a family history of multiple sclerosis, having had symptoms prior to the optic neuritis that could suggest multiple sclerosis, of course, puts you at a high risk. But primarily was the appearance of the MRI. The MRI of the brain that is done at the time of the optic neuritis was a big predictor of the risk of developing multiple sclerosis.
Does everyone who develops optic neuritis definitely then go on to have MS?
No, fortunately not. So if the initial MRI was normal, completely normal, doesn't show any scar in the brain, the risk of developing multiple sclerosis is about 20 to 25%. So one out of four people, or one out of five even, will develop multiple sclerosis later on. However, if that initial MRI showed spots in the brain that were more characteristic of multiple sclerosis, even one spot, that increased the risk to 75%. So three out of four people will develop multiple sclerosis later on.
So what is the incidence of optic neuritis currently in the United States? I mean, how frequently does it occur?
Yeah, so overall it's about 1 to 5 cases per 100,000 population every year. Here in upstate New York, central New York, we're a little higher risk due to a latitude effect.
So what is that?
The farther we live from the equator, the more likely to develop optic neuritis or multiple sclerosis.
Do they understand the relationship there?
We don't quite understand it very well. There seems to be a link with vitamin D, maybe, and exposure to sunlight. And this is true in the northern hemisphere as well as in the southern hemisphere.
That's very interesting and probably worthy of continued study.
Yes.
And puzzling, as you said. So going back to this notion of the relationship between the two, why is it so important, you know, the fact that if you have optic neuritis and you could potentially be at risk for MS, what is the significance of that in terms of treatment?
Probably the greatest significance is that since the early to mid-90s, medications were developed for multiple sclerosis, and we have treatment now, and we haven't found a cure, so to speak, but the treatments have become more and more effective and better tolerated over the years. When these medications came out in the early 90s and mid-90s, and even more recently, We also looked at this population that was at high risk for developing multiple sclerosis, primarily after developing optic neuritis, but also other presentations. So when they have an abnormal MRI, when these people have an abnormal MRI at the clinical presentation, they may or may not meet criteria for multiple sclerosis, but they are at a high risk. So these medications several of them have been tested in this group at risk and proven that the risk of developing multiple sclerosis is significantly diminished when people go on treatment early on.
Wow. So that's very significant.
That's right. That's one of the things that changed how we treat optic neuritis in a dramatic way.
So basically looking at it as a harbinger, a potential harbinger of the MS developing later on, you start to treat early for the MS.
Yes.
And that early treatment can literally diminish the possibility of getting it?
Exactly. And also improve the quality of life and postpone that evolution that we had spoken about into a secondary progressive phase from the relapsing remitting form of the disease.
Tell us a little bit more about what's going on in the world of MS today in terms of treatment, though. You were alluding to certain kinds of treatments. Tell us about the whole treatment protocol these days and the effectiveness.
Yeah, so multiple sclerosis medications can be divided into different generations. So the first generation of medications were medications where the efficacy was about a third. So they slowed down the disease by about a third, which
and
is quite an accomplishment.
Yes, those began in the 90s, you said.
Those began in the early to mid-90s, and they were developed even into the early 2000s. And these were four medications that were available in the United States. The four medications were injectable by self-injection, and some were subcutaneous. One was intramuscular. Then as we move into the 2000s, other medication strategies have come out. So the first one to come out was a medication that is given intravenously once a month, highly effective, but with some risks attached. And as of more recent, we have another wave of medication that are actually oral. These are pill forms. And two of the three have more efficacy, in broad terms, reducing the disease progression by about two-thirds.
Wow.
So now we're talking about significant slowing down of the disease.
So there is no cure, but at this point you can manage the disease, slow down its progression, and perhaps diminish the symptoms?
Absolutely. For most people with multiple sclerosis, the management can be quite successful. And there is a lot of research in multiple sclerosis. The pipeline, as we say, is full with promise and new medications coming down the road. So there's certainly a lot of hope for multiple sclerosis and probably finding that holy grail, that cure that we're all waiting for.
You think it's possible?
Oh, we all think it's possible. Absolutely.
Interesting, though, to me, I'm just coming back to that relationship that you alluded to earlier about the change in latitude, the latitude effect. It sounds to me like could be something that could unlock some key to this whole story.
Yeah, so some people have pursued this farther and farther. And in recent years, vitamin D has become a main player. And we don't have a definitive answer yet, but the recommendation is that patients with multiple sclerosis take vitamin D supplement, have their vitamin D levels checked, and race if needed.
Terrific information. Thanks so much. And vitamin D is probably good for all of us for lots of reasons. My guest has been Dr. Luis Mexico, professor of ophthalmology and professor and chair of neurology at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.